It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hi, everybody. And here's what I thought we'd probably talk about today for Monday morning politics. President Obama using Mother's Day to urge young, healthy adults to sign up for Obamacare.
Any parent knows that there's nothing we won't do to take care of our kids. And it's nice to have somebody getting your back.
Getting your back by, if you're young and healthy, signing up, buying insurance on the private market, putting that money into the system that probably wouldn't need to be used for your benefits so other people could get their insurance at a reasonable rate when they're older. The president said that on Friday to set up this line of talk. But who remembers Friday? Obamacare got buried this weekend in an unusually dense flurry of scandals. The Heritage Foundation fired one of its top intellectuals for arguing immigration would lower the national IQ. A top Hillary Clinton deputy's email suggests Benghazi talking points be scrubbed of references to al-Qaeda and prior warnings, and the IRS admitted it to targeting conservative groups for extra IRS scrutiny.
His spokesman has said that it should be investigated, but the president needs to make crystal clear that this is totally unacceptable in America.
And so instead of the president speaking out about the importance of signing up for health insurance, the Sunday morning talk shows were filled with clips like that. Senator Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, asking why he's not speaking out about the IRS and others talking about Benghazi. So we'll begin today by trying to separate who really did what wrong from the political talking points with Ben Smith, veteran political reporter and former Daily News columnist, now editor of BuzzFeed. Hi, Ben. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
And Ben, let's begin with the IRS. And before I even accept that one as a scandal, I wonder how much of what's being reported was just due diligence. We've talked plenty on this show, and you've reported about the abuse of the tax code by political groups, mostly conservative ones, as far as we know, who set themselves up as fake 501c4 social service organizations or bent the rules as 501c4 social service organizations, not really performing much social service. They were really kind of fronts for the big anonymous political donations they could make to super PACs if they had that 501c4 social service group status. So if I was the IRS, I would probably be making doubly sure that every 501c4 with something political in its title, whether it sounded liberal or conservative, was really a charity and not a fake political group. So do we know that this alleged scandal was not really due diligence?
We certainly don't. We can't, you know, see inside the hearts of the auditors who were pushing these Tea Party groups particularly hard. There was also sort of a wave of really scammy fake charities set up around that time, you know, to sort of take advantage of conservatives and steal their money. You know, all that said, I mean, you may think, and reporters may report that these groups aren't quote unquote real social service organizations, but the tax code is full of plain language characterizations that then don't match up exactly to the IRS's description of, say, child care. You can't take a child care deduction for anything you think is child care. There's a very specific definition. There's a very specific definition of social service organization, which, you know, is a technical definition, but this is all technical. You know, that's what the IRS is. And so, you know, just because you or I or a Democratic politician thinks these guys aren't a real social service organization, you know, that's one thing. For the auditors to then go and deny them nonprofit status, you know, it's the IRS's culture is to keep that very, very separate from the political conversation. And the perception here, which doesn't seem crazy that those things have kind of merged and bled together, you know, is, I think, something that people on both sides of the aisle are pretty freaked out about.
A legitimate question, and especially if they did it only with conservative-leaning groups, because – again, from the reporting that I've read, investigative reporting that I've read, and, you know, New York Times and Washington Post and places like that, this tended to go on more in the last election cycle on the conservative side. But no question that there were instances of this on both sides. So if they were singling out groups that seemed like they may have been conservative-leaning or had Tea Party in their name or any of those things, singling them out for a different kind of scrutiny than liberal groups that may have been doing the same dance, then we really have a problem.
There's a very rarely enforced provision of tax law that says that you can deny nonprofit status to people who oppose established American public policy. It's used, the only time I know of it being used is to deny nonprofit status to Bob Jones University because they were racist. But there was a case, there have been a couple cases, you know, these Tea Party guys were claiming the IRS was going after them 2 years ago, and everyone, including everyone on the right, thought they were crazy and paranoid. And there were other weird cases. There was a Jewish group that opposed Obama's Israel policy that filed suit, and there's a hearing actually in a couple of months, saying that an IRS agent had sort of challenged them on whether they were opposing U.S. foreign policy in a way that seemed to get very, very far into their, you know, ability to express themselves.
Because if you're a policy group, then you're not tax exempt, right? A charity group is tax exempt.
No, that's not it. There's a suggestion tax code that says that if you oppose established American public policy, you can lose your tax exemption. If you agree with it, that's fine. It's something that is usually
that sounds really crazy.
It does sound crazy, and it's used typically only against extremists,
right,
to deny particularly racist groups tax nonprofit status. But you could see how aggressive enforcement, you know, could get you into very uncomfortable places.
The Wall Street Journal advances this story today. It says a high-ranking IRS official knew as early as mid-2011 that conservative groups were being inappropriately targeted. Nearly a year before, then IRS Commissioner Douglas Shulman told a congressional committee that the agency was not targeting conservative groups. So a distinction between what was known when and what they admitted
right
publicly when. How significant a development do you think that is?
I mean, I think this is a huge story. I mean, I think this is something that the question of who knew what when exactly, and also, you know, of their motives in targeting these groups and whether they, in fact, did inappropriately deny people nonprofit status. I think it's going to be a really big story. I mean, I think this is something that is going to, you know, that we're going to see subpoenas and we're going to learn. I mean, you know, did anybody in the White House know about this? Were there White House lawyers, you know, talking to people at the IRS about under what theory you can deny people nonprofit status?
And they're saying so far that it was some low-level IRS agents not working with supervision from above telling them to do this. But here is more of Senator Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, on CNN yesterday.
I just don't buy that this was a couple of rogue IRS employees. After all, groups with progressive in their names were not targeted similarly. There's evidence that higher-level supervisors were aware of this, and the IRS was not forthcoming in telling Congress about the problem.
But, Ben, do we know yet how high up the suspicion goes on this? Because one of the things I read is that the head of the IRS at this time during the Obama administration was actually a George W. Bush appointee.
Yeah, we don't know how high up it goes. We don't know, you know, whether this was something where people were sort of trying to please the new boss in a presumptive way or what. I mean, there's a lot to learn, but it's also the culture of the IRS is so fully to stay out of politics. I think a lot of people when this came up thought it was crazy because a lot of people think, you know, IRS agents are so careful about this because they know they can get into trouble. I mean, you know, this was one of the articles of impeachment against Nixon and Watergate was abusing the IRS.
Mm-hmm. All right, next topic, and my guest is Ben Smith, editor of BuzzFeed. Benghazi, ABC News this weekend said it obtained emails showing extensive edits to the disputed Susan Rice talking points in the days after the attack, most specifically a top aide to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton with an email suggesting edits. According to ABC, the original talking point said al-Qaeda affiliates could be involved, and the CIA had warned the consulate of threats in advance. The Hillary office email said that, quote, could be abused by members of Congress to beat up the State Department for not paying attention to warnings. So why would we want to feed that, unquote? Now, you're laughing. I don't know the full context of that snippet, but that sounds like a political edit that ABC is reporting that came from very close to Hillary Clinton. What do you make of it?
I mean, it's. I mean, what's funny is, of course, however the the real facts that they were trying to suppress could have been abused, their cover-up is obviously going to get them substantially more slack, as is often the case. This strikes me as, you know, a real problem, but a very kind of predictable, familiar bureaucratic one, which is that an agency and its leaders are trying to cover their behinds, you know, in a situation where they obviously screwed up. The ambassador got killed. This was, you know, and then immediately after that, their impulse is to say, let's see if we can conceal the fact that we should have known better, that we were warned. I mean, ultimately, these were kind of, I mean, small scale things. I mean, you know, whether or not they'd been warned. I mean, you know, their ambassador was killed. This was a huge catastrophe for them. And the idea that they were fighting these kind of rear guard actions over detail, trying to keep details out of the talking points, is, you know, perhaps the way bureaucracies and politicians work often, but isn't particularly inspiring. And this is not the cover-up that Mitt Romney was alleging, which was Obama doesn't want you to know that we're actually losing the war on terror, which never really made sense. That isn't really how bureaucracies work. This is exactly how bureaucracies work. The State Department and the people around Clinton trying to conceal the fact that they should have known better.
So here is ABC White House correspondent Jonathan Karl pressing White House spokesman Jay Carney at the White House Daily Briefing on Friday about some of the emails.
The CIA original version included references to al-Qaeda. Those were taken out after the CIA wrote its initial draft.
And then the CIA wrote another draft.
Based on input from the State Department.
Well, but here's what I've been saying.
Do you deny that?
No, John. There was an interagency process, which is always the case, because a lot of agencies have stakes. The whole effort here by Republicans to find some hidden mystery comes to nothing because the president called it an act of terror.
Jay Carney, the White House spokesman. But this is getting political, not just with respect to the president, but with respect to Hillary Clinton's future. Here's Republican Senator Rand Paul, as excerpted on CNN.
They're asking for security. They're pleading for security, and they got nothing. It was inexcusable. It was a dereliction of duty, and it should preclude her from holding higher office.
So maybe they're running the 2016 race already, Rand Paul versus Hillary Clinton. But Ben, does Secretary Clinton, who did that full day of testimony on Benghazi recently, need to come out publicly to do more damage control or answer a very specific question as to whether she was aware of or even helped to write that particular email?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very legitimate question. Cheryl Mills, or her sort of senior staffer, is often kind of the gatekeeper in these situations. And there's some suggestion she was involved. Did she mention, you know, did Clinton or not? Was Clinton aware of it? Certainly a totally reasonable question.
Go ahead.
You know, although again, you know, this isn't Watergate. This is inside bureaucratic CYA trying to protect Clinton from looking bad. I mean, she wound up looking terrible.
And could this, because of what you just said, it being kind of run-of-the-mill stuff in a way, blow back on the Republicans for over-politicizing it? Senator Inhofe is talking about impeachment, and so Senator Susan Collins and John McCain had to distance themselves from that yesterday on the Sunday talk shows. Daryl Issa, big Republican congressman, hawk on this from the House, got into a bickering match with former Ambassador Pickering, who wrote a report on Benghazi and either was or wasn't invited to testify before ISIS committee about it. You know, so if they look like they're turning a tragedy into a fake Watergate, maybe national respect for the Republicans in Congress sinks lower than it already is.
I mean, I don't know. I think the Republicans obviously have enough of a point here that they're not making something out of thin air at all. I think Benghazi, ultimately, politically speaking, is going to live on as one of these things like Whitewater, like kind of a code word for if you hate the Clintons, Clintonian dishonesty and evil. And will be something they talk about on Fox News until, you know, we both pass from the earth. For the rest of the 80% of the country will kind of fade. You'll hear it a lot, and people will have forgotten what happened there. It'll be kind of a conservative code word.
Ben Smith from BuzzFeed with us. And final scandal of the weekend, the powerful conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation, had its own scandal dump on Friday. And, of course, we know all kinds of government agencies and corporations and everybody else likes to release their most damaging news on Friday afternoon because people don't pay that much attention to news on Saturdays. And this is about the firing or resignation of one of their top policy wonks on immigration, Jason Richwine, who suggested that a reason to stop comprehensive immigration reform might be that Latino immigrants have lower IQs than whites and Asians. Heritage has been a leading voice to try to stop the reform effort in the Senate. We remember Jim DeMint, who's their CEO now, making the Sunday talk show rounds, or at least one of them last week, being one of the few Republicans or conservatives at this point to actually be very out there arguing against some kind of comprehensive immigration reform. And from what I can gather, Richwine has held this position publicly for years about IQ. So why did they fire him now?
You know, it sounds like they hadn't really done their due diligence on this guy in particular. I mean, you know, this is a huge problem for the anti-immigration movement in particular, which is that you just don't have to spread – that a lot of these in the institutions and the in the academics who oppose legalizing undocumented immigrants, you know, have roots on the racist right. Like there's a sort of continuum, not all of them by any means, but you do in a lot of these institutions, you know, took money from people like the Pioneer Fund, which is a group that, you know, holds all sorts of really lunatic views on IQ. And you know, a lot of that movement then comes out of people who sympathized with the Nazis in the 30s. It's this sort of stream of American intellectual life that has basically stayed on the margins, but occasionally touches the mainstream, but then it makes, you know, but then it means that people who are not racist, who are trying to make a kind of restrictionist case or case for less immigration, often find themselves with very, very strange bedfellows.
By the way, speaking of right-wing political groups, and I should say that, you know, I've been talking to you publicly for years in your various reporting and column positions, and you're an independent guy and you dish to both sides and you get it from both sides. But we got a tweet from a listener wondering about a BuzzFeed partnership event with the Koch brothers, and I saw it on your app. What's up with that?
We take advertising and we also take sponsors. We have people sponsor events. We're actually doing an immigration summit in Washington tomorrow night, and the sponsor is indeed the Koch brothers. The Heritage Institute, in fact, just pulled out of it on us because I think they're having a lot of trouble this week. But I think it'll be hopefully a really interesting conversation reflecting all the sides of that debate.
What I hear is that in addition to the people on the left not obviously not being happy that you're partnering with the Koch brothers on a sponsored event, some people on the right are not happy that the Koch brothers are participating in what they see as an amnesty event.
Yes, we've gotten actually a great deal of flack from conservatives who are upset about our working with the hyper-liberal Koch brothers on this event. It's been very confusing. It's been a bit of a confusing week for us.
And so before you go, and on a lighter note, which everyone could use by now in this conversation, were you surprised last month when the president himself referred to the impact that your young news organization is having when he said this at the White House Correspondents' Dinner?
But the problem is that the media landscape is changing so rapidly. You can't keep up with it. I remember when BuzzFeed was just something I did in college around 2 a.m.
So did you have any heads up you were going to be the subject of that laugh line?
No, that was an incredibly pleasant surprise because we do see ourselves as part of a really changing media landscape and also do like to be associated with marijuana.
And the president of the United States making light of drug use. He couldn't have done that with, say, the name of ABC News.
But can you imagine, right, that, you know, from I didn't inhale to making jokes about the munchies?
Any inappropriate
to which that culture has changed?
Any inappropriateness there?
I think the president of the United States probably has a pretty good handle on what's going to play and what won't. I think pot and marijuana use in particular has just become destigmatized to a really remarkable degree.
Ben Smith, editor-in-chief of BuzzFeed. Thanks a lot, Ben.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, a WNYC investigation into how NJ Transit stored so many trains in flood zones before Sandy. Hint, they blew the math. Stay with us.